Lecture 26, The Peace of Nicias.
In this lecture, I plan to deal with the terms of the Peace of Nicias and whether this peace was ever workable in 421 BC or not. The peace did result in a permanent settlement of outstanding issues between Athens or Sparta. Anyway, it was intended to do so. And it takes its name after the leading Athenian statesman, Nicias, who negotiated from the Athenian side. On the Spartan side, King Pleistianax, who had been recalled from exile a year earlier, was the principal negotiator for the Spartans. Now, the Peace of Nicias, in Thucydides' mind, was just an extended time out. He was in Sparta at the time. He, remember, had been exiled for military incompetence back in 424 BC. And he doesn't tell us much directly about himself, but the nature of the information we have on the Peace of Nicias and the subsequent diplomatic maneuvers that led to the breakdown of that peace over the course of 421 and 420 BC indicate that Thucydides was probably in the Peloponnesus. He moved among various guest friends that he had at Corinth, Argos, perhaps at Thebes, certainly at Sparta. Probably knew King Agis II, who was the son and very young king ruling in Sparta. He was the Eurypontid king from the junior line and the son of King Archidamus, who had opposed the war. And so Thucydides gives us a great deal of information about the inner workings of the Peloponnesian League, politics in Sparta, and also the politics among some of the leading states in the Peloponnesian League, information which previously he does not offer to us, probably because he doesn't have it. And in Thucydides' opinion, based on all of this information, this treaty was doomed from the start. And what I want to do in this lecture is look at the terms of the treaty and the motives behind both states in moving towards peace in 421 BC, and then examine why the treaty may have been flawed and whether Thucydides' judgment is honest or not on this, or accurate. His opinion is that it was a peace only in name, and that the period from 421 down to 414 BC, a period of 7 years, when the treaty was in effect, that really Athens and Sparta were continuing to battle through proxies, that the matter of a declaration of war and the renewal of the Peloponnesian War was inevitable. And that's a point we would like to raise in this lecture and in the following lecture when we look in more detail at the breakdown of the peace during that seven-year period. So let's first return to the spring of 421 BC, when Athenians and Spartans in both cities, both in Athens and Sparta, ratified this treaty and oaths were taken to end the fighting that had broken out over 10 years earlier. Well, in 421 BC, the situation was favorable for a treaty for several reasons. One is the war weariness on both sides. Spartans and Athenians at this point had essentially fought a generation. That 10 years of fighting pretty much consumed a generation of men, both cities, and really both leagues, confederations, whatever we wish to call them, the Peloponnesian League and the Athenian Empire, had sustained enormous amount of human and financial loss. At the same time, the principal figures seen as promoting the war in both cities had died at the Battle of Amphipolis the year before. That would be Cleon on the Athenian side, the notorious demagogue, detested by Thucydides, and Brasidas, the Spartan commander, who turned Thucydides from an Athenian general into a historian. In the case of Nicias, he emerged almost unchallenged in the assembly of Athens by the spring of 421 BC. There were other demagogues about, but none of them of the stature of Cleon, and the Athenian public, which had already considered an armistice about 18 months earlier, were certainly in a mood to accept a treaty. Nicias, however, is an unusual figure. I've made mention of him several times before. He stood on a credible war record in 421 BC. He was one of the many successors of Pericles. Nonetheless, that war record was a bit dubious. Nicias had a tendency of always being late for the decisive battle. He took on operations that were never really a risky or chancy proposition. He always had sufficient forces. They were usually minor objectives, secondary fronts. On the other hand, he struck a pose that he was essentially the new Pericles, and what Thucydides, Plutarch, all of the historians and sources tell us, Nicias really wanted to end the war so he could play the role of a Periclean benefactor. He really would excel at the arts of peace, and he wanted to get out of that war now that his reputation was intact, and he didn't want to take the risk of further fighting.